Shit.
Hello and good afternoon to everyone listening. This is Luke Jenkins, and today I'll be operating the board for Fish Talk. Over the phone, we have our host, Sam Berlin, and in person sitting in the podcast room, we have Sam Decker and Therese Vicenti.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Hi, Sam.
Oh, hello, Therese.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I just couldn't make it across. My boat's kind of swamped over there. Got caught on a cut bank and filled up with water.
Man.
So I got someone from Tunt coming up. He said he's gonna look into it. He said he's got tools, so he might get it going. But anyway, I'd like to hear some reports of what you guys might have been doing this past summer.
Sure, I can start if that works. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm looking. Sam Decker's here at the studio with me, and for those listening, this is Therese Vicente with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. I guess some recent updates. I could start with maybe some fishing news, since that's what everyone wants to hear that. And Sam, chime in too with some information from Bethel Test Fish and your side of things. But folks listening probably know, last week on the Kuskokwim, there were two openers downriver of the Kalskag line. It was last Monday, so a week ago, and then Saturday. And I have some harvest estimates from those openers. And just as a reminder for any new listeners, we produce these harvest estimates after all the subsistence fishing opportunities that we can. And there's a couple sources of information that go into it. There's harvest surveys in lower Kuskokwim communities between Tuluksak and Tuntutuliak. That includes Bethel, and that's ONC, the Bethel tribe, that does surveys at the Bethel Boat Harbor and with area fish camps. We step in at the Fish Commission and our partners at Fish and Wildlife Service when they need some help. And then there's an aerial boat and net count. And normally it's Fish and Wildlife Service that flies those. Though similarly, we step in when help's needed because there's a shortage of pilots and crew and things like that. So we get on the ground harvest numbers and then from the air boat and net counts. And then we're able to plug all those numbers into a computer program, and it spits out these harvest estimates, which is our best guess at how many fish were caught between Tunt and Tuluksak on a given opener. So from the opportunity last Monday, and if I remember right, the weather was decent, though it was a work day. We know that can be kind of tough for people that have 9-to-5 jobs. Some folks still did make it out, so we're estimating in that stretch of the lower river, lower Kuskokwim, there were at least 48 people that went out and drifted and 11 set nets. And folks were mainly catching silver salmon, which makes sense this time of year. So we estimate about 1,300 silver salmon, coho salmon were harvested. One lonely king someone caught. And then a handful of chum, a couple dozen. We're estimating about 90 chum salmon and about 115 sockeye salmon. So still some fish, lots more silvers. And then on Saturday, Our best guess is there were at least 51 people that went out and drifted, and only a handful of set nets, about four we estimate. And from those 50 or so fishing trips, we estimate about 1,400 coho salmon were harvested, about 130 sockeye salmon, and about 30 chum salmon. And nobody reported catching any king salmon that we heard of. So these are definitely minimum estimates at this point. They're always minimum estimates, but it's a good indicator of what's been going on. And I was looking at similar harvest estimates from this time last year, and they're not quite as high. Though we know last year, Sam, you probably remember, the silvers came in awesome last year. They were so strong and thick.
Yep, I remember.
Yeah. So, but folks seem to be doing okay. And the river, after the opener on Saturday, the main stem Kuskokwim from the mouth up to the Kalskag line at the bluffs in Uknavik Slough, it closed again to gill nets. But our management team, the Intertribal Fish Commission's in-season managers, and our partners at Fish and Wildlife Service are meeting this afternoon to kind of go through the data and see if we can have more openers soon. So they're meeting, they're discussing, and I'm hopeful that in the next couple days, folks might have some news about next fishing opportunities or something like that. But nothing more to say on that yet, since they haven't had their meeting yet. Doi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sam?
Hi, Sam. Well, our news on the state of Alaska side is that we have concluded our aerial surveys. So Dave and I spent the last 2 weeks with this as our primary focus. A lot of time we spent on weather holds, but we worked with two different pilots down here in Bethel, and then I worked with a third pilot up out of the McGrath region. And we have some good news to report, which is that up in the headwaters, we had a record number of king salmon that were counted in the Chinitnook River and in the Gagaraya. And we made our escapement goals for the salmon fork of the Pitka River. But we're still having concerns about the Aniak River and the Salmon River on the Aniak as well. Those were much lower, probably record low, compared to what we were hoping to see. So we're not sure why those runs are in so much trouble.
What about these lower rivers like Gwisluk and Kisralik?
The Gwisluk, we did not make our escapement goal for that one. But for our run reconstruction, that goal is based on the Weir. We didn't get the Weir in this year, and so we can't say how many fish would have gone up that river. The Kisaralik, we did not get that river because of weather. On the day that we were able to finally get out and do the Kwithluk, we flew over the Kisaralik, and we got rocked pretty hard by some winds. Oh. So you know where it goes through those mountains?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we didn't. We went up above the mountains and did not get that river either. The Kinnektok River, on the other hand, looked really good, and then we weren't able to get down to the Good News River either. So there's actually two rivers that we weren't able to get, the Kisaralik and the Good News River.
How are people doing down that way? Kinnektok, Good News, Platinum?
We've been hearing that they're doing well. They're up inside the rivers, rod and reeling for the cohos, and the folks who are going out, they're catching what they need.
Good. That's good to know.
Yeah. Especially on a year when we can't get that aerial survey.
Yeah, on that, Tris, do you have any more on those reports that you want to throw that?
Well, for the harvest estimates, not too much, but some other projects that we've been working on. We have our eDNA, environmental DNA collection that's still ongoing with the Department of Fish and Game at the George River Weir. Like Sam Decker just said, the Gweethluk Weir didn't make it in this year, and so they stopped eDNA sampling. They were doing it during the smolt season, actually, to get some abundance estimates, or at least just check and see. You know, they can tell how the fish are in the river with the young salmon versus the spawner salmon. So they're doing that up the Gweethluk earlier this year. And then the Takotna Weir is the crew's monitoring the weir and the water levels, but the water levels have really skyrocketed, and I know it's been raining pretty much everywhere, it seems. Yeah. But especially up in the headwaters, it's been cats and dogs, I hear. So the water's really high up the Takotna, so they haven't been able to pull out the weir yet, but sounds like they've stopped running the weir as of, I think, last week or the week before. And so with that, they stopped the eDNA collection. And, I mean, really, we're just wrapping up our field season as we're, it seems like we're not inching into fall, but kind of sprinting into fall. It's gotten colder and colder. Yeah, but one other project that's still ongoing for the next couple weeks, maybe till the end of the month, is our water temperature monitoring network. I think some of my colleagues have talked about this on the show earlier this summer, but they set out these little logger machines. They're small, kind of the size of a water filter. And they've sunk some, anchored them in with some buoys and anchors in the main stem Kuskokwim and at some of our tributary project sites. And these little, they call them hobo loggers, but they're tracking water temperature throughout the summer multiple times a day. And once you retrieve those loggers at the end of the year, you can plug the data into your computer and it tells you the temperature of the stream's water through the whole time it was set. It's really neat. So our crew is getting ready to pull the rest of those loggers out near the Bethel area and up at the Gweethluk Weir where they were set earlier this season, and they're going to continue at the Takotna Weir with this logger, or maybe not at the Takotna Weir, but up the Takotna River through the end of this month. So this is part of a bigger river-wide water temperature monitoring network. So there's other communities, tribes, agencies, researchers involved in collecting this information from throughout our river drainage.
On the looking at the temperatures, how are they comparing to the other years? Seems like it's this year we got a cold summer here.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of the data yet from this year, but I know in talking with people, it does seem like the water stayed cooler, and I think that's because, or what I've been told is because we had so much snow last winter that it's continued to melt and keep the streams really cool, which is great for the salmon.
Yep.
And even when we had that real heat wave in, when was that, early, middle July? I think even then it sounded like the temperatures were still pretty cool in the water, which is really good. Because I know I felt that and was like, oh no, I hope it's not a repeat of 2019. Yeah, but it doesn't seem like that, and you're right, now it's so cold that I don't think we have to worry about heat stress in our fish this year, which is really good, because that takes a toll on their health and their eggs.
Mm-hmm. What is your best guess on the people that are doing the meeting to see if they can open it? Will we get a chance?
I don't call the shots, and I don't want to say anything, before things are finalized and decided. But I do know that our in-season managers and the management team at Yukon Delta Refuge, they, as much as they prioritize conservation, they do know people need to fish, and they prioritize that too. And they know that silvers are super important to kind of fill in the freezer and get fresh food on the table. So it's tough for me to say, and I'm grateful that it's not my decision, because they're really hard decisions. But I think we'll hear in the next couple of days what they decide.
Yes. Sam, do you have anything else to report on your table?
We've got a little update from the Weirs. So hold on just one second. Let me get there. Okay. So, yeah, the George River Weir is flooded out, but the Kaguglik Weir is still in. They'll be in for a couple more weeks yet. We've got a resupply to that crew on Wednesday, and then I think we've got one more resupply to them at the end of August. So, and I do have an update for folks on the Bethel test fish. We did receive word from our good news weir was one of the weirs that was unfunded this year when OSM lost their funding. And so we were supposed to have a crew out there working on that weir all summer. We received word from the tribal council in Good News Bay that some of the river had changed path and was eroding underneath some of the tent platforms, which are big plywood, looks like the floor to a house. And we set up a wall tent on top of it to keep our crew and equipment dry during the summer times. So some of those tent platforms are overhanging the river and were causing concerns about navigation hazards and, just clogging up the river right there. So we are going to have to end our Bethel test fish project early so that that crew can fly out to the Good News River and clean up that site. So, in trying to split the difference between when our crew is available and getting the best data that we can for the coho run, we decided that our last fishing day for Bethel test fish would be the 15th of August. That is historically the average day when 75% of the run, the coho run, has gone past the Bethel test fish location on the river. And so we feel pretty good about getting data until that day. And then we feel that it's very important to get out to the Good News area and clean up that tent site. Along with all of the other projects that lost their OSM funding, we are expecting to have that project be funded for next year. We should be hearing the final details on that funding sometime this winter, probably January or February, which will give us enough time to do our hiring and get that project set up for success. So we're just going to be pulling that equipment back from the bank, stacking it up, doing a really good inventory to figure out what will need to be replaced if we do get the funding to go forward with that weir for next year. So folks in Good News Bay who are listening, you'll see some fish and game activity starting on the 17th. We'll be landing there and trying to get into our connexes and get our boat operational and probably see us at the store and maybe up at the tribal council. And then we'll be running back and forth for a couple of days to try and take care of that equipment. They're hoping to be done on August 22nd and able to get back here to Bethel so that they can take care of their nets and leave the Bethel test fish equipment in good shape for next year.
Yeah, sounds good. On that Kanik-Tok, that's the one right by Gwinnahuk, right?
Yeah.
Mm. And that river is doing good?
Yeah, their aerial survey was very strong. I was trying to text with Dave Ronfola to try and get that aerial count. I might have it.
Mm.
Oh, I do. Okay, on the Kanik-Tok, let's see here. He saw 4,500 kings, and that was in sections 101, which is down near the village, and then up from there, sections 102 and 103, and then we just named these sections because they have different levels of importance to do with our the models that we run. So we take, you know, 45 miles of river and divide them up into smaller chunks so that we can compare the runs from year to year within those sections. So then for sockeye salmon, maybe 175,000, which is well above the goal. The goal is up to about 40,000, 15,000 to 40,000 for the sockeye. So really strong sockeye run there.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Fish are coming on a comeback, hopefully. If they let them pass through a false pass, they'll get here. And those little breaks that they gave us, that we did good on our first openers here.
Yeah, we'd have to look at the harvest by day from this year, and then we'd want to compare that to the harvest by day in previous years.
Mm-hmm. How far are you guys going back? 5 years? 6 years?
The averages that you hear us refer to all the time for the state, we tend to use the last 20 years just as kind of a nice round number. We feel that that encompasses a lot of high years, a lot of low years, a lot of different temperature ranges, a lot of different tide ranges, and a lot of different fishing effort ranges. But I believe we have data going back to 1988 when the working group started.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Let me see. Back to 1980 on some of these rivers. I'm just checking my data tables real quick. Back to 1962 on other rivers. The Kanik-Tok goes back to 1962.
That's for aerial surveys?
It's for a range of different things.
Okay.
Aerial surveys, total counts, harvest information.
How often are you guys flying? Is it every day or?
Well, when the weather is this bad, we fly whenever we can. We aim for our flights to be during the peak spawning week.
Mm.
And so, again, we look at these historical run timings and we try to aim for that week. So for the in-river tributaries that I was working on, our window is from July 22nd until August 5th. And then when we have our projects running and our weirs running, we will use that data to look for information about the peak spawning, a little bit more dialed in on what's happening this year. And then we can fine tune that to really try and capture the peak spawning week on each of these rivers. The other thing that we do when we're flying is we record the number of fish that we see that are on reds. And here we mean reds spelled with two D's, R-E-D-D-S, and that means a nest. This is the hole that the salmon dig when they're waving their tails that they use to deposit their eggs into. So if we see those reds, then we know that they're spawning. If we see reds without fish, then we know that they have already spawned. And if we see fish in large groups that are holding in deep holes or haven't entered the river, then we know that those fish are moving through and have not yet reached their spawning grounds. And that helps us to understand what we're looking at, so that when we count 2,000 fish, but most of them are on reds, or we see a couple reds with no fish on them, then we know we've really nailed that peak spawning week. If we see 2,000 fish on the same river, but they're in lower sections of the river and they're in bigger groups of fish and we don't see any reds yet, then we know that we're probably early and that the fish haven't, you know, there may be even more fish about to move into that area and move up and start claiming their spots for building their nests. And then, you know, that gives us more information about what we're seeing. If we meet our escapement goal, but no reds have been built yet, then probably that escapement goal is low. But if we don't meet our escapement goal, but what we're seeing is no reds and a bunch of fish pooled up, then maybe we missed the right week.
So, also on that, do you guys have any reports from the False Pass area? How they did?
I don't. Do you, Therese?
I have some information. And I think we'll know more even this winter once they tally up all their numbers and fishing game down there spits out their, their report, but we were tracking the numbers of chum salmon that were caught in the South Alaska Peninsula, or Area M, or that False Pass Unimak Island area that you talk about, Sam. We tracked it mostly through June. I don't have up-to-date numbers now because we know it's in that June time period that a lot of Western Alaska chum salmon are intercepted in Area M. And by the end of June, those commercial fisheries had harvested over 418,000 chum salmon.
Wow.
Yeah. That's not their highest on record by any means, but it's also not their lowest year. And it's really important that I say that 418,000 chums that were caught in South Area M were not all from the Kuskokwim or the Yukon or the Unalakleet. They have some genetic studies of those rivers, not of those rivers, but of the fish that were caught, trying to trace them back to some of our western and interior Alaska rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And back about almost 20 years ago now, 15 to 20 years ago, they did some genetic sampling and found that over half of all the chum salmon caught in Area M were intercepted on their way back to western and interior Alaska. Mm. It was 57% of all the chums between 2007 and 2009 were born and raised and heading back to rivers between Kotzebue and Bristol Bay.
Mm.
But then in the last couple years, that number has dropped. So in 2022, they started updating, or I guess kind of redoing that genetic analysis to see if it was similar proportions of Western Alaska fish. They found that it had dropped from 57% of the Area M harvests were Western Alaska down to 18%. Last year, it bumped up a little bit to 28%, so about one in every four chum salmon that were harvested in Area M in 2023 were from Western Alaska. But first of all, I should say that's still very significant. All of those numbers are very significant to our rivers and to the fishers, the families on those rivers, to the ecosystems. I was just up in Aniak last week talking with folks, and pretty much everyone I talked with just stressed how important the Aniak River is for chum salmon. It's historically been one of the biggest chum salmon producing rivers on the Kuskokwim. And for several years now, we've been hearing from folks that they're not seeing as many chum salmon carcasses on the gravel bars up the Aniak, that the rivers don't stink like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard this year that it seems better. One of our in-season managers, Megan Leary, lives in Aniak and is a Napaimute tribal citizen. She was up at Napaimute's spirit camp about a week or two ago with some kids from the Middle Kuskokwim region doing cultural activities. It sounded like a really great time. But they were up one of the tributaries above Napaimute, and they saw chum salmon spawners moving through. And she said she hadn't seen that in a couple years. So that's really encouraging. But, yeah, nonetheless, back to Area M, though. Even though not all the fish intercepted there are from our rivers, they're still really important. The numbers that are really high, considering how low our chum runs are. But it's also, both state, feds, the public, we don't have very good genetic information for all of our rivers. That's something that our Intertribal Fish Commission has been working with some more researchers on to try to refine and break down these genetic areas, I guess you could say, into smaller amounts. Because when I say, like last year, 28% of all the chums caught in Area M were headed to coastal Western Alaska and the upper middle Yukon, that coastal Western Alaska ranges from Kotzebue all the way down to Bristol Bay. And we don't know how much of that percent goes to each river. It might be different. It might be even. They might all go to one. You know, it's really hard to tell. So we're trying to work with some partners and researchers. I know a lot of people are interested in this, in trying to break down that percentage into smaller scales so we can say with more confidence, like, this many fish were Kuskokwim fish, or were even from the middle Kuskokwim, were from the Aniak. We're still quite a ways out from being able to do that, but it's really important, so we're starting. Enjoy.
Yeah, that's quite interesting that these fish, you know, they keep coming back year after year, and all of our conservation efforts they're not working. And it's due to interception. We know that that's happening, and it's something that hopefully will work out with other regions of Alaska, and figure something out. They need to. They're going to deplete our fish. Pretty soon there's going to be no more fish to talk about.
That's a really heavy statement, Sam. Coming from the Yukon River, I'd like to say how much hope that I see here on the Cusco. This is Sam Decker with Fish and Game, the other Sam. What I see on the Kuskokwim is a lot of success. And the run numbers, even of king salmon, are higher and more stable than what we've seen on the Kuskokwim. And I think that that makes the Kuskokwim a really important research location. Because, as Therese mentioned, you know, especially those chum salmon, their genetics are not as easy to distinguish. And on the Yukon, the summer chum have bounced back in the way that we expected them to. The fall chums, not quite so much. But what the one group of chums that you can tell apart by the easy level of genetics work that we've done is the Canadian stocks of the fall chum. They are genetically distinct. The Salmon Genome Project started in the 80s. I had friends in high school who spent their summers working in the lab at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Anchorage, and worked on, you know, I think it was pink salmon that they did first, because those have a two-year return, and so it was the best life history cycle to run those test data on. And they nailed down the techniques, and those genetic samples are kept in Anchorage, and we have occasionally reprocessed them when we have had updates in the technology or a decrease in the cost per sample, which has meant that we can reevaluate those data. What I think is super interesting about why those coastal Western Alaska chums are not easy to tell apart from each other is because salmon are so tied in with glaciers. Mm-hmm. And as glaciers have advanced and retreated over the years, they've covered up the rivers. They've run the rivers dry. And then the salmon move up the coast, or the salmon move down the coast. And so it's really because of that their genes have mixed over the last 13,000 years. And, you know, what we see on the landscape today, where the rivers are, what the rivers look like, the depth of the water, the temperature of the water, it's really a very short snapshot that we're looking at. So as the techniques get better, as the cost per sample comes down because we're able to process more things with computers, I do have hope that we'll be able to get a better view of the genetics in this area, on these coastal Western Alaska salmon. And I also hope that the Kuskokwim can play a big part in helping to identify why the Yukon salmon are suffering so much. Because one of the main differences, there are many differences between these two runs, the Kuskokwim runs and the Yukon runs. But one of the most obvious is just the length of the river. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of health studies that are going on the salmon on the Yukon for the last several years and continuing for the next couple of years. And I'm hoping that we can bring some of that research here to the Kuskokwim as a way of testing that on fish who have less far to swim. The fall chum on the Yukon are swimming over 2,000 miles, just like their king salmon cousins. Yeah. And here on the Kuskokwim, it's only a 700-mile river, which still sounds enormous.
It's pretty lengthy. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of tributaries, too. So I'm kind of... well, you know, it's kind of hard when we hear these numbers that the commercial fishermen had pulled out in other areas where we in the rivers maybe. That our fish are dropping the bucket, you know, it's compared to what those guys are pulling out.
That's definitely true, Sam. One of the things, I know I've talked about this on the show before, but we just bring it up all the time at the Intertribal Fish Commission, is cumulative effects that are hurting our salmon, or, you know, could be benefiting too. But right now it seems like it's it's all pretty detrimental. So the intercept and bycatch is definitely one of the factors. So is climate change. So is how things have built up year after year. There's a lot of other things attributed to climate change, like how the food that salmon are eating when they're growing up in the ocean is not as nutritious as it used to be. I know on the Yukon, Sam could talk about this too, there's lots of ichthyophonus that might be happening here on the Kuskokwim too. So all these things add up. It's like death by a thousand cuts for our salmon. But I do have hope. I'm glad Sam Decker said that too. I think people on this river and on the Yukon too, really throughout Western Alaska, have made enormous sacrifices to keep salmon alive and to keep fish coming back. It's not easy to put down your nets and keep your boat on shore and not go out and fish when the fish are here. But I think it is helping. I think local people helping make decisions about fishing on the Kuskokwim, both through Intertribal Fish Commission, also the working group, I think that's very helpful. So I do have hope. And I know as I go to so many of those very long meetings at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council and the Board of Fisheries, their marathon meetings, there's more and more people from our rivers and from small rural villages and or tribal subsistence fisher people and former commercial fisher people. The voices are getting really loud. I have elders that, you know, they tell me not supposed to complain about anything and supposed to be grateful. I think that's true. I know people are grateful, but I know people want to be telling the truth too, and honesty is a big thing as well. So I see more and more people speaking up, and that gives me hope.
Yeah,
I think it'll make a difference.
Yeah, I'm one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you pigs need to speak out. I know that in our tradition, that we're not supposed to be complaining about our foods, our subsistence gathering. It's been like that for years and years. Just recently, people are starting to speak out. And hopefully, you know, hopefully things will start to work out. working together with the people down in False Pass and trawlers along the coast. It's possible that we could work together. Something, you know, something's got to happen. I know it's not easy, and it won't get easy.
I think that's where groups like Fish Commission can be very, very helpful, though. I know over on the Yukon, the Yukon River, YRDFA, the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Commission, they do a lot of work to work with the advisory committees and the regional advisory committees, to work with people from the communities that are being impacted, to help them understand how best to interact with these very intimidating government agencies, and to feel community rather than to feel isolated in these big meetings where everyone's wearing suits. I think that this is a really interesting point in the storyline of fishing and people and the history of Alaska, where we're at a point where we have these third-party groups between the fishers and the agencies to help both parties to communicate with each other in ways that are more comfortable, so that all of these voices can be heard in the way that they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I would offer that there's a difference between complaining about the resource and complaining about the regulations. That engaging in discussions about the regulations, the public process that's part of both state and federal fisheries issues, it's not disrespectful to the fish. That's what I would propose.
Like back in the 1980s, when there was a huge heat wave, our chums were dying off from heat. And it made me realize that what the temperature of the water can play on these fish. Like this year it's a very good year for fish this year here. Mm-hmm. And even though I went down to Johnson River, I did pretty good, even though there was a lot of competition there. But we did all right. I filled up a tub, and Greek River I went to try there too, and I didn't do too bad. But the cost of gas is another thing. Trying to travel to these open, non-spawning open rivers. Mm-hmm. The cost of gas is so high.
Sam, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have a caller online. Yvonne from Bethel.
Yikita.
Hi, look.
Good afternoon.
Those that are joining in, good afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Key words I'm hearing: interception. And I don't agree with blaming my people for the lack of fish on the Arctic and Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers. All's been said. What's happening in interception, the keywords? Out and continue dumping false pass area in. And those are facts. What's happened? I've been on the Yukon, way down there at Emo with my father-in-law. There's two mouths. North mouth, Kotlik, middle mouth, Emo, and Alaganak. You can't even see the other side. And as you continue up Pilot Station, Pitcock Point, river's still wide. And then you see on Yukon men on TV, and then you look at the river, it's still wide. Still blame my people for the shortage of fish. I was absent for about 10 days since the 29th. Came back on the 6th. And then we went about town. I noticed that the fish been at Boat Harbor. I see my people waiting. Waiting for fish while they should be out there getting their own. And having their nets in the water. That's not right. Third week of August, opened up for them. Boy, that made me mad. Waiting for a fishing game to deliver fish. Continued blaming on us. I didn't like that. But anyway, 75% all escaped. Here's the question I have for, where's the fish special test fish? Is it located at most of Church Slough?
This is Sam Decker with Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Did you ask where the test fishery is happening?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... I'm trying to remember the name of the slough. I think it's Straight Slough?
No, I believe it's still Church Slough.
We go up Church Slough. Oh, yes. Church Slough is on the north side of the bank where we go. Yes, that
location. Why, I'm asking that for years. We've been asking Fish and Game. That's no longer the channel, main channel. The main channel is now Straight Slough. Common sense would tell you guys need to move up to Swalby. And what size mesh you guys are using?
We are using 5 3/8 and 8-inch.
Yeah, that's good size right there. I feel and believe, and all has been said, the test with fish we need to move to Swalby. Why? The main channel straight through, but we still catch fish on the Jopeach side.
Yeah. I really appreciate that question. We've had that question quite a few times this year. And the reason is because the models that we use are built around the fish that we encounter at this one location. One of the things that gives Bethel test fish its strength is fishing in the same location year after year after year after year. If we were to move to a new location, we don't have anything to compare that location against, and it would be 10 years before we could make any mathematical models based on that data. So our hope right now is to verify what we're seeing at the sonar and eventually transition to using the sonar as our gold standard rather than Bethel test fish.
Yeah, why I'm saying that people are hurting of not getting fish.
One of the other things that we've been hearing this year, you had a concern about the 5 3/8 inch mesh, is that the sockeye salmon and the coho salmon are both a little bit smaller, and that mesh size is just not capturing the fish that we would have expected to capture. And so Bethel test fish, we say the word underperformed against our expectations for being able to predict the sockeye and the coho runs.
native knowledge, me and Sam, we know what run this is. This is the first run. They're all small.
Yeah.
And the next ones are the hook nose, what we call the hook nose. Those are the 6-inch size. And why the urgency and not being able for my people to fish? In fact, I know people are waiting. They target these silver salmon to... It's on their third week, and the window's closing for them to get that. And this is not right. You need to have it more openings. They only have 3 weeks left.
Yvonne.
And I don't believe in the test fishery. I ever said it's wrong anyway. And you need to go by the Tribal Fish Commission on what the people are catching up river. And to keep it closed like this, that window's closing for putting away salmon. And I know people wait for the silvers to return, and they target them and get them. And due to the high cost of living and gas, you can't deny them that. They say to open up the river and more openings.
Yvonne, I appreciate that. I appreciate those comments, and thank you for calling in to the talk show, because that's what makes this talk show so effective, is the chance to interact with the fishers on the river. I'll just remind folks that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Fish Commission are determining openings and closures for within the refuge area, which is from the mouth of the Kuskokwim River up to Aniak, and that the state waters are upstream from Aniak and starting from the mouth of the river out into the bay, including the Kinnektok River and the Good News River, and that in those areas, fishing is all wide open for cohos, even including with 6-inch mesh gill nets.
Yeah, native knowledge. This is genuine silver salmon with just like the smelts. But... on a more positive note, look, I fished that. I used a 70-foot net, five and a half. I got 18, and this in rainy weather, I had to put them in today. Remembering the late Bob Aloysius, I remember you need to make holes on the bottom of your smokehouse to have air and ventilation.
Yep.
So, look, my smokehouse is with metal, you know, but on the bottom I put 6 by 6 inch holes on, let's see, the north and on the east and west side, and I put mesh over them, but I'm using a box fan, a little 12 by 12 fan, and I notice... After 2 hours, there's crust on them instead of them spoiling, so along with smoke. But ingenuity comes in, and I seen it on Facebook before where they use fans and heat. I'm also using heat, and it's working. But in closing, more openings, please. Why? There are only 3 weeks left. And thanks for giving my opinion. And for the Yukon, that cyanide spill is coming down. I know what, how big effect that will be, but I encourage for Fish and Game and Tribal Fish Commission to give us more openings. Good afternoon.
And Sam, we have another caller. Marie from Nunapichok.
Hello?
Good afternoon. Yeah?
Hi, Cousin Sam. This is Cousin Marie. Marie Chris calling from Nunapichok. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Yeah. I think this is the first time I call about the fishing. I first I'm going to, I want to say, sir, that I'm not very good speaking in English. I'll try my best. Yeah, I've been hearing this fishing, commercial fishing, how many years now. I don't know why this is happening to us. Every year, they have fishermen in the Kuskokwim River. They're having problem about this opening fishing for fishermen opening and closing. I don't know. And how you see it. Every day, I've been hearing this talk about it. The fish they can hear, they can hear. I don't know. It wasn't years ago. I can't remember what years ago when we used to go to every year to fish camp. And my oldest brother had no problem. He gets in his boat and go fishing with the fish net, how you say it. And he used to caught a lot of big salmon. Oh, they're big. Without problem, we not supposed to mention their names. Before they come to Bethel, things wasn't like this. Fish things wasn't like this. It was very different to me. Fishermen, they had no problem. They'd get in their boat and fish, bring a lot of food to the fish camp. But look at it right now. Since these since they came to our, how you see it, this is our river, Kuskokwim. I don't know how to say it. Since they came, everything is changing. To me, like they're taking over, trying to take over. That's why these fishermen in Kuskokwim River, they're having a lot of problems. And it's, I hear it every day, talk about it. Okay, Sam, thanks for letting me talk. I try my best and talk. Yeah, I hope everything changed. Yeah, sorry you fishermen are having problems. I'm on your side every year when you guys are ready to fish in Kuskokwim River. This is our river and these are our food. Okay, thanks, Sam, for let me talk. I try my best and talk and try to talk in English.
Okay.
Thank you, Sam. Bye.
Yeah. Goya nas kala kalipin. On our time here, we're kind of going over our hourly. So, but you guys want to go for hour and a half?
Sure.
Or do you guys have any some other things to do?
It's up to you guys.
I if I could, Sam, I'd like to bring up that the applications are open for the fishery disaster monies for subsistence fishers. And there's a post on the Kuskokwim Fishing ADF&G Facebook page. And if you don't have Facebook, you can give us a call at the office
And we can help you either by printing out the form or by sending you a link. And our office phone number is, well, you can call me at 543-2709.
Okay. 543-2709.
And was that for the 2020 fishery disaster?
I think it's King 2020 salmon? And 2021.
Oh, okay.
For subsistence fishers. And it's for the Cusco and the Yukon Rivers.
Mm.
But those are federal disaster monies that just became available. And so this is the time to get your application in.
Yes, I'll certainly look into that. I'll give you a call one of these days.
Oh, good. Yeah,
see what happens.
There is a deadline. It's in September, and so folks should make a point of trying to get that done.
Mm, yeah, there was another one that was out for 2013 that I heard about, and we didn't qualify in that.
I don't know all the rules, so I don't know if people will qualify or not, but I took a quick look at the paperwork. It's about 2 pages long, and I would hope that anyone who would like to is able to get that paperwork done. So if you need help taking a look at that paperwork, please just give us a call.
Yes, I will do that. That's good to know. We need all the help we can get.
Yeah.
The costs of things are here in Bethel is so ridiculous, so high. Everything is so high.
Yeah. And that paperwork can be confusing and intimidating to look at. And so, you know, we do paperwork all day long. We're certainly happy to help.
Yes. And you're located down there by 5th Avenue, is it?
Yeah, we're on 4th Avenue right next to that family medical clinic and the dentist office. Just down from AC.
Yeah. I'm gonna need to purchase a harvesting ticket too for moose. That those have deadlines towards.
Yeah, I don't know the deadlines.
On tier two.
But
so last year I almost didn't get one.
Oh.
But last day I went there and that Fish and Wildlife guy was saying it, cutting it close.
Well, if you come into our office in the next couple of weeks, you will see a new face. We have some folks helping to cover the front desk. So for the next 2 weeks, we have Emma, and she's visiting from the Fairbanks office, and she is here to help answer phones and issue hunting permits and all of those things.
Wow. Yeah.
She's very excited to be here.
Is there any other reports that you guys would like to make?
I'd like to mention that our working group meeting is on Wednesday from 10 until 12, and you can come on down to the Fish and Game office on 4th Avenue, just down from the AC, and we'll be meeting in person, but you can also call in if you're not in the Bethel. And so the 800 number for that is 1-800-315-6338, and then it'll ask you for a code, and the code is 58756, and then you press the pound key or the hashtag key, depending on what age you are.
Okay.
And this this week we do have some news to get out. Since our meetings are all public, the working group submitted a letter to the North Pacific Marine Fisheries Council about the trawlers, and we have had a response to that. So we will be going over the response, and I think we're also having a representative come and give a very short presentation on the pollock trawlers and how the pollock trawlers are different from the flatfish trawlers that folks were seeing out near Newtok this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's they were reporting some boats way up there.
Yeah, so the working group was very concerned about those and found out that they were with the flatfish trawl, and so wrote this letter to the North Pacific Marine Fisheries Council, and sent the letter to, I think, about 30 different people, all of the voting members, all of the alternates, and some of the staff.
Yeah. On that 800 number, 1-888?
It's 1-800-1800.
Okay.
315-6338. And then the code or the password is 58756. And then you press the pound key or the hashtag key.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for the chance to read that again. I hope people write that down and call in.
Yeah. 58756.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad we had this fish talk report, and it's always good to get some frustration out sometimes.
Sam, we have another caller.
Okay. Good afternoon. Hello, caller.
You're talking to me?
You're the one. Go ahead.
Are you talking to me? Yes.
Yes. We're talking to you.
I tuned into this show late. I don't know if you guys talked about this. I don't know if I'm saying the word right. United Nations wrap-up war. Maybe that same person could say it right.
The United Nations what?
Supposed to be like an observer for the indigenous people. They could come out here and look around. It's probably too late for this year. But maybe they can send a couple to Seattle, where all those boats come from. Maybe even South Central. United Nations observer.
I am very curious.
Yeah, they talked about this on shows like this before on this station.
Do you mean the observers?
Yes, observers.
The observers on the trawling vessels? From the North Pacific?
Where
Pacific?
They can go. And I don't expect the United States to have any mercy for us. So, just like the American Indian and the buffalo, so it's got to be stopped, or the bus will hit us and roll right over us. like our brothers down south. But they're buffalo. Okay, I would encourage you guys to look at the United Nations observers. I'm sure they got phones, I'm sure they could take movies about what's going on. If they aren't intimidated or bribed. Okay, that's all I got right now.
Yee.
Thank you very much.
Koyana Kwatka.
Koyana Technok.
Koyana.
Yeah, I really didn't get what he was saying. United Nations, what? Did you get it? Did you guys say, when have you discarded?
He said United Nations observers, and I Googled United Nations fisheries observers, and I only came up with the NOAA fisheries observers, which are the ones that are already on the Bering Sea pollock trawling ships.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if there is a different program, but I will definitely spend a little bit of time with Google and see if I can find out something.
I wonder if it's, you know, in countries that have had wars, the United Nations will sometimes send in peacekeepers or observers that can help document things. I wonder if that might be something, just outside people writing down the truth, what's happening. I think that's a good tip, so something to look into. And Sam, we have another caller, Ruth Yvonne.
Good afternoon. Hello.
Hi. Oh, are you talking to Ruth Yvonne?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have a question for you guys. When will you guys open it indefinitely? Because people only get what they need and then they're done. Right now, people need to make salted fish and filleted fish, at least the families that I've been talking to. That's my question.
Koyana Ruth, for the question, this is Therese with Intertribal Fish Commission. We don't have dates when they'll open it, whether for another opener or indefinitely, but the managers are meeting right now. They just started their meeting a few minutes ago. They're going to be talking about it. So,
I hope they consider it. Okay, thank you for my call.
Okay, bye. Yeah, I'll pass your comments on to them right now. So they can consider them, and I'm hoping they've been pretty quick at getting the announcements out this year, so I'm hoping as early as tomorrow we might hear when the next fishing in the lower Kuskokwim is, but sometimes it takes a couple days, so sometime soon.
One of you ladies know that subsistence hotline in Fish and Wildlife Reserve?
I think the number is 907-543-1008. I shouldn't say that on the air before, I'm sure, though. Hold on.
I think they call it the fish line.
Mm-hmm, yeah. They update it after all the openers are announced. It is. Mm-hmm. It's 543-1008.
Okay.
And it's, don't expect to hear from anybody when they pick up, but it plays a recording of the opener, the times, the days, things like that. So once they get the next opener or the end of closures, whatever they decide. Once they get that decided and finalized, there will be a recording on that, on that fish info line at the refuge.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. One of the things that I'm kind of hoping that will work out too is that budget that ran out of money or didn't come through. I hope that pulls through this year for the Weirs.
Mm-hmm. Us that, too.
That kind of a setback.
Yeah, I'm not even sure Spencer knows what's going to happen with that budget right now. That would be coming straight from OSM, the Office of Subsistence Management, mm-hmm. for the federal government. But hopefully we'll hear in January, in time for next season.
Mm-hmm. And on those well, one of the callers that called in, Ruth, was hoping for an indefinite opener. I think that's what even Ivan was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the past, when the state has managed at some point during the month of August, when we feel safe about the COHO numbers, we would just return it to our status quo for subsistence, which is open until it's closed. Mm-hmm. So for the state, subsistence defaults open. And as soon as we feel that the COHO escapement is likely to be met, then we would just open it wide up. But now it's there was a lawsuit and the federal government won. And so now all of the waters adjacent to the refuge are operated by the refuge manager. And so this year they're consulting with the Fish Commission and coming to their decisions. So,
but this is Therese, and thanks, Sam. I think they're getting close to that point, and it's, Intertribal Fish Commission, there's 5 in-season managers that are elected by the tribal representatives from the river, and they're all fishermen too. So I know they want to fish, they want to put silvers in the freezer, they want to make salunaks and things. So I think it's close. And like Sam Decker shared, we're about over half of the coho salmon should be through the river. And I know just talking with folks, even as far up as Dwathbulook, everyone's saying the silver seemed kind of early this year. So so they use the best information they have. Bethel test fish right now is kind of what we got for the next couple days. A lot of local knowledge, traditional knowledge. So my fingers are crossed. I think they're close to opening it up, but we'll know hopefully in a day or two what they've decided.
Yes. I have my fingers crossed too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Therese, I have a question for you about folks who call in and want to give their opinion about that. Is the best way for them to call their fish commissioner, the local person for their tribe, or is it the best person for them to talk to Spencer at the refuge?
It can be any of the above. All of our commissioners and in-season managers are listed on our website. We don't give out their phone numbers, but a lot of people know one another or can get in touch with one another through their tribes. So definitely get in touch with your in-season manager, your regions, your areas manager, because they can bring your comments directly to the management table. You can look on our website, cuscosalmon.org, for all that information. But another way, too, is we have weekly Tuesday morning teleconferences throughout the salmon season, and we're still going on with them for as long as there's management announcements to make. So tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. we'll have our Riverwide weekly teleconference. It's open to anyone in the public, and that's often a great way to share your thoughts and comments and advice for our managers, and our staff helps pass that on. And before we close, I can share those numbers. There's a series of them. So again, they're on our website, CuscoSalmon.org.
Okay.
But if you call 888-788-0099, an operator will ask you for the meeting ID. Do you enter 816-0140-5063? And then the pound sign or hashtag sign. That will get you into our teleconference. You can hear from our team any news updates. And we always ask people to share their updates too. We love hearing about how your fishing's going, how your fish camp looks this year. And then any questions, comments, concerns you have, we're happy to receive those as well. So I encourage folks to call in tomorrow, Tuesday at 10 a.m. to our teleconference. Koyana, Sam.
Koyana, Kwas. Both of you ladies being on this show. Last minute remark there, Sam.
I think we have covered it. It's been a very full show. Thank you for hosting. Even though your poor boat is soggy, we wish you the best of luck with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, there's a friend of mine coming from Tunt to work on the motor. He's got the tools, compressor, stuff like that.
Mm. Oh, good. Well, good luck.
All right. Goeie nacht.
Bye.